Hello, lovelies, and welcome to the Cyber Sisters podcast. We're your Cyber Sisters, Allison and Emily, two cyber educators talking edtech, pedagogy, and life in the digital age. This week, we'll be having our coaching conversation on Sarah Rivera's video feedback. So, Emily, how are you doing this week? Did you enjoy video feedbacking with our students?
I did. I had a chance to try this out. We did it. Well, I did it. I say we, like me and my students, but the students really didn't do anything. I did it all.
I do the same thing.
I did all the work. I did a TDA with them. So we spent 3 days for the most part. We broke down the TDA and we did it all.
Well, and I think this is a good point for you to clarify exactly what a TDA is for maybe someone who's listening who don't know what those kind of questions are.
Yeah. I just assume that everybody's listening is from Pennsylvania. So you might not. So Pennsylvania has the great, amazing PSSA test.
This is our state standardized test, basically. Yeah.
And they have to write a text-dependent analysis question, which Allison is the English teacher, so she's probably well more versed than I am, but it's basically a writing piece that they have to pull pieces of evidence from the text. And the kids struggle with it. They right. don't like to do it. They hate it.
It can be a little dry, right? Like they, in order to effectively answer one of these questions, students really need to thoroughly understand what they read, which is usually sometimes on our lovely tests, maybe not the most interesting material. They then need to understand the way that the question is written. They tend to be written in very strong academic language. And then they need to actually write a response that is almost universally an essay kind of format, and they need to use very specific evidence from their reading to really show how well they understood the text and do an analysis, usually that's comparing two parts of the text, maybe, character development and plot, or, theme and setting or something like that. So they're a challenging kind of work. And I give Emily so much credit because she's doing this in history, right? Like I'm supposed to do this in English class. And she took on a TDA, which bravo. I think that is just so wonderful.
And they need to be more than one sentence, which is all my kids want to write. But when I was grading it, I knew I wanted to use that PSSA rubric that is how they're scored for the TDAs. And it's not as straightforward as the rubrics that I use. I have the rubric that's in our LMS that I use when I grade all of their writing. And I knew that not only is the writing complex, but the rubric that they use to grade is also not the most accessible for seventh graders.
I think that's so clever.
So I decided that I would screencast my feedback. So what I did was I just screencasted I pulled the PSSA rubric up, and then I screencasted just that browser tab. And I would point to things on the rubric while I was explaining, you did this well, you should improve with this. And something that I always made sure to do, which Allison, I'm sure you probably did the same thing, was I made sure to give a positive note to every single student. Even if maybe they only scored a one, I still, even if it was just, you had great capitalization and punctuation, which some students got that as their only positive. But I made sure that every single kid got a positive while in addition to the things to work on.
Yeah, I think that's great. So you then did go ahead and use, because I know, was it the same one that Sarah recommended? Screencast was the one that you used for Screencastify was the one that you used to give your feedback.
Yeah, and I basically chose Screencastify because I had used it before.
Okay.
So I had some level of comfort there, just because I had used it before and I was like, I'm already tackling this big project of trying to figure out how to screencast feedback and want to do it. And if I just take out the equation of learning a new tool, then that's one less thing to try to tackle in this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, anytime you can make something a little bit easier on yourself in this kind of big project, I think that's really important.
The one disadvantage, which we talked about with Sarah when we talked to her, was that you can only get 50 videos a month.
I was literally going to say, how did you get around this issue? Because we have way more than 50 students.
So I actually had kind of two different workarounds. One was that because of where my assignment fell, it was at the end of the month. So I did some of them at the end of the month and then the rest at the beginning of the next.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah, that got me around. And the other thing I did was that if the student was very off topic, I didn't make them a video. I just gave them written feedback that was, this answer is way off topic. Because I did get some answers that were really off topic. And even some that was just like, their feedback was, this is a summary and doesn't answer the question. I didn't make them a video for that because I knew that that was really their feedback.
Right.
Was that you didn't answer the question. So I didn't need to make those videos. So that kind of, that cut down the number as well, because not that I was picky about who got a video, but I kind of like, I weeded those kids out as I was making them.
Well, so you leveled. I mean, that's what I think is clever, because I'm sure that you got students who didn't turn it in at all.
Correct.
So saying, you know, we sort of talked about this a little bit in the episode with Sarah, was sort of, how are you going, if you're not going to do every single kid, right? Which I agree, in a situation like this, if you have students who don't turn it in, they obviously don't need a video. Or if you have students that like kind of aren't ready for a video yet because they can't even really give you a product that fits what that rubric is asking for. It's kind of leveled, right? So maybe there's almost a way in which moving forward, that's a way to lessen the load of making this many videos, because, you know, some students, you know, won't turn it in or maybe won't be ready for it. And then once you're ready for it, then you'll get the screencasted videos or something like that. How much time did it take you, like beginning to end, to do all of your videos?
Honest answer, I'm not sure.
Okay, totally fair.
I mean, I did it over many evenings in like chunks of time.
You're so much smarter than me. I definitely did them like all in one day.
Yeah, no, I didn't do it that way, which I kind of almost wish I did, because then I would have a better answer for you, because I don't know.
Yeah, no.
But I was like, I did some this evening and some that evening, and I actually tried to not do it during my planning period only because I wanted to make sure I didn't get interrupted and there wasn't any email sounds coming through or IM sounds coming through or any of that. I wanted to make sure I didn't get those, but I don't know, because I did it over chunks of time. I did it all in one chunk though. How long did yours take you?
Mine took me probably a good like 4 or 5 hours, which sounds long, but it's not that long compared to what I thought it was going to be. Because my videos on average, we'll talk about how I sort of structured mine. But mine were, I would say, an average of 2.5 minutes. I had some that were definitely shorter, that were like a minute and a half. And I had some that were a little bit longer if I had more feedback to give. I think my longest one was probably maybe 3 3/4 to like 4 minutes long. But I did a lot of direct instruction in some of those. And when I talk about sort of how I set mine up, I think it will sort of make sense, like how that made sense. And I know that Sarah had recommended really capping it at that like 2-minute mark, but I did feel like I had this captive audience almost, because I had their grade like right there. And I, the way that I actually went through and did it, and I'm interested to see if you did the same, was that I almost was, it was like grade along with me. So like their writing was on one half of my screen and then their rubric was on the other, and the rubric was blank at the beginning. So they had to sit through my little instruction to see like me give the 10 or the 8 or like whatever I gave in each of the categories. So it was like a real time thing. Did you do it real time, or did you have it already filled out and then give like the little blurb?
Yeah. So because I was using the PSSA writing rubric, I didn't, I just kind of had it up as the PDF because I pulled it right from PDE's website. And that was one reason why I picked this particular assignment to give for the feedback, because it didn't have, like, I didn't have a rubric to hand them.
Right.
So what I did was I went and I read it first, and I kind of, I picked what grade I was going to give them. And I said, you earned a 1 because of XYZ.
Right.
And you couldn't have gotten a 2 because you didn't do this.
That's really smart. That's really smart.
Yeah. I thought that was a good, I didn't think of it right away. Like, I think the first couple didn't get that. But I was like, I want them to realize like why they're getting that score, and why they couldn't have scored higher. But while you were talking, I thought about this. I actually was at a PACT event the other day, and we were sharing new apps. And I was like, well, my app that I'm sharing isn't new, but I used it in a new way. And I shared my idea of using Screencastify for feedback, and everybody loved it. They thought it was such a great idea.
Yay!
But somebody suggested, they said when they give their feedback, they actually don't give them a grade.
Ooh.
They will give them their feedback, and then the students have to basically do something for them to then get the grade. So they were a Google school, so they would put like the comments in, and then the students have to resolve the comment, and then they'll earn their grade.
Interesting.
So I was trying to figure out if we could do it that same way. So we might have to play around with that, but I liked that idea as well, which is almost like what you were doing with the way that you screencasted yours.
Right.
Was that they have to wait until the end to see what their grade is. So conceivably, you could do your feedback that way and not put their grade in the grade book for them to see it pop up, and then make them, I don't know, email you or tell you a secret word or something. And then you would put their grade in, because then you would know they watched it.
That is a good suggestion. I know what I did was I gave them their grade and their feedback in the grade book. And then I gave them time to revise. That was the thing that I was interested in when we eventually talk about like student responses, that I would love to talk about, because what I wanted to use the grade as a motivator for some students, that I was tough. In some ways, I actually think I was tougher grading this way than I am when I'm not speaking directly to the student. And I think some of it was I just felt so much better able to give quality feedback and better able to explain myself as a teacher doing it this way. And so I think there were times when, I was maybe between two different ones, you know, like you could go one way or could go the other. And I gave them the lower grade in part because I knew that I had explained it well. I had pointed to in their specific essay what it was that they had done wrong. And I could say, you know, look right here at the end of your introduction. There is no thesis statement right here, right? This is where it should be. And I could point to it with my mouse. In the past, when maybe there was that missing in an essay, I maybe would have shied away a little bit. Not that I wouldn't have marked them down for it, but I would have been so concerned about making sure that they really understood what a thesis statement was or where it should go. Because sometimes I think students read something like you're missing a thesis statement. Well, if the student knew what a thesis statement was, and where it was supposed to go, it would have been in there, right? So this was an opportunity to do that kind of instruction. And so what I did was I included a link that was underneath it that said, if you would like to revise, you have this amount of time to revise. You have to sign up with me to do that revision, though. And that way I could keep an eye on the students who were doing that revision. They went back in and made changes to revise their essay, and I gave them the better score. So I thought that that was a good process and a good way to make sure that, like, obviously not every student took advantage of it. But I did feel like many more students than would have before read the feedback, took it seriously, and went back into their own work and made those changes. So I was really happy with it. In general, I was really happy with this. I really felt very free as a teacher, which I was not necessarily expecting to have such a positive reaction to this particular technique. But I really loved it. I had a great time with it.
Yeah. And one of the things that I did to try to get them is I have since done another TDA, which I have not graded yet. So I don't know, like, I don't have solid data yet to tell you, yeah, this worked great because I scored better the next time.
Right.
I tried having them before we started the next TDA, was I gave them a reflection sheet, and I just did a Google form and I said, go watch the feedback and then tell me what your score was, which was kind of like for me being like, you know how to find where your grade is, because some of them still don't know how to do that. You would do better and one thing that you would do the same, and what's your goal score on the next one.
I love that.
And while we were talking, it made me think, because one of my students wrote, I wanted a 12, but my work wasn't good enough for you. And I was like, yeah, that tells me that you didn't actually watch the feedback. And like, for the thing that you're going to do different, the student wrote, I'm not sure, but I did what was asked of me, except maybe I could word it the way you want it worded. And the prompt was so open-ended that it was about Sumerian values. Like, they could have picked any value they wanted, as long as they had evidence from the text to back it up. So that tells me that the student didn't actually watch the feedback, because I was very specific, both in class and then in the feedback, that I was like, the value you picked was fine, but either you didn't have the right evidence to back it up, because some of them would be like, the Sumerians valued bravery, and here's a piece from the passage that has nothing to do with being brave.
Right.
So I'd be like, well, the value is great, but your evidence doesn't match that.
Right.
So I think that's really hard for the kids to understand that, like, when we grade something, it's not us against them. Like,
oh gosh.
Right? Like, and like, when I first read that, like, I got so upset with, because I was like, no, that's not what I meant at all. Like, it's not that your work wasn't good enough for me. It's that you, and obviously I'm looking at his reflection right now on my screen, not what he wrote. But like, trying to get them to understand that, I think is hard, that when we grade, and especially when we grade against rubrics, like, we're grading objectively as we can. And not because we like you or we don't like you. In this case, not because I don't like you or I don't think your work was good enough. Like, you know what I mean?
Trust me, I completely get what you mean. I had a similar thing where I had students, I was testing something last year where I had them doing reflections on the feedback that I gave. And I got extremely similar answers, where you really did have some students that could listen to the instruction or could at that point read the instruction and actually understand the feedback that was being given to them. And then you had students who were struggling to understand the feedback because they didn't understand the concept in the first place. Like the student who, if you knew what a thesis statement was, you would have had one. So me saying you didn't have a thesis statement doesn't really help you. You need something else, right? And then you had students who really struggled. And I think it's an element of growth mindset that they believe that, you know, whether or not they do well in your class is whether or not you like them as people. And I see that a lot, especially towards the end of quarter. You'll get all of those emails from students, or like you'll be talking to a student in class, and you'll get a lot of that very personal stuff. And so I think that's why it's so important to watch tone, why it's so important to be careful the way that you phrase things. But I almost felt more empowered to address those kinds of problems using this method because they could hear my voice. And I made sure that like the way that I spoke was, you know, as sweet and kind as I could, even as I was showing them on their work, these are the things that you could do better. I wanted them to see it on their own page. I don't think I've actually talked about how I structured mine. It'll be easier to explain some of this stuff once I talk about how I structured it. So I did not use either one of the programs that Sarah suggested. They were both really great programs. But I had a sneaking suspicion that I was going to want to do things with videos this year. And so over the summer, I bought myself a present. It's a program called CyberLink. It was not super expensive. I got it from Best Buy. They have a teacher discount, so it was super cool. And I used CyberLink to make the videos. And then I took those videos and I moved them into, we have a Google for Education Drive. All of my students have individual writing folders in there. And then I link those individual writing folders into our online middle school for them to access. And that's how they do all of their writing for me. So they're doing it in Google Docs. So I took their video and I put it into their drive. So then I didn't have to deal with the space issue on my computer because it was quite a few videos. It took a long time. I actually think like the recording of the videos was one thing. Actually moving the videos into my network took quite a long time as well. But by the time you've recorded the videos, you're sort of happy to watch and like watch a little bar like load. It's not a big deal. So that each kid has that record of the video in their folder. But then I also took the link to the video and put it in the grade book in the feedback section next to it. So all of it was sort of together. They could get to it from the grade book or they could go into their writing folder and both were right there because during the second half of the year, that grade book we know will go away. So I still want them to have that record to be able to go back to. I had them do it on their personal narrative assignment. It's the first big essay that they do in English 7. So it's an essay where they're not referring back to a text. They're really writing about their own life and their own experience. And the focus is on essay structure, right? Because they're not using it to analyze a text, I'm really, really heavy about, you know, do you have an introduction paragraph? What should be here? What should be in your body? What should be in your conclusion? Because now we're going to do this every single unit for the rest of the year. And it was a really, really great experience. I found that there were a couple of sort of unexpected things that worked really, really well. But being able to have them in their Google folders like that, I think was definitely one of them. The other thing that saved me a ton of time, and girl, I was not prepared for this, was that I have the Grammarly extension on my computer. So when I went in, you can see it on my video link in the show notes. When I went in, all of the student mistakes that were on their Google Docs highlighted in Grammarly. So I went through and the stuff that I wasn't grading them on. So for example, there might have been comma errors that we didn't talk about yet, or errors that were things that we had not, that were sort of too advanced for them. I resolved all of them in my Grammarly so that the only stuff that was highlighted was their mistakes. That was great because then I could point to their mistakes on the page. And then at the end, girl, I just took a screenshot of that and attached it to the bottom of their Google Doc. So now they have me having marked up the whole thing, but it was, I mean, it took me 30 seconds as opposed to, you know, several minutes per kid to go in and highlight, you didn't capitalize I, and then you didn't capitalize I, and then you didn't capitalize I. It was all there. So that saved me a ton of time in terms of what this could have looked like. I think this would have been a longer grading process had I needed to do all of the conventions work and then give them feedback on their writing. But because that was basically taken like care of by a computer, thank you, or outsourcing things to a computer, I felt really good about taking that time to do more quality instruction on their writing. So that was how I set mine up. And then I gave them their feedback. They had time to turn in edits to me to raise their grade. But I love your idea of having them read it again before they do writing. Like, I would love to add something. They have a checklist that I do. And every time we add something new to our grammar that we do in class, I add that to their writer's checklists that they're supposed to turn in before they turn into me. I think I should add, go back and watch your feedback from last assignment. I wonder if that will help certain students stick certain ideas. But what you were saying before about really helping students to understand feedback, I wonder how much just doing something like this over and over and over and over again will really help with breaking from students that idea that the reason that they're not doing well is because they just weren't good enough, or that we don't like them, right? Maybe it's going to take some students watching a video like that for several units before they finally hear like what it actually is that we're referring to. And so I'm really excited. I think I've committed to this for the rest of the year. and I'm also using it in our personal learning time. Which is basically our target time at Agora. So it's our time when we're working with a select group of students based on data to work on something in particular. And for my students, I'm having them like read and analyze a question. It's sort of what Emily's doing with TDAs, but like reading something complex, analyzing a question, answering the question. And then I'm going to have them do that on a Friday so that the Monday when they come back, every Monday for like the quarter that I have them, they'll have video feedback. So I am like, 12 feet under with with video feedback, I think, for the next couple of weeks.
I was just going to clarify too, our school, we are not a Google school.
No, we are not.
The teachers have Google accounts, but the kids don't. And so Allison has come up with this amazing workaround so kids can write in Google Docs. But it's great, but it's slightly complicated. So like, I don't do it for mine. So my kids wrote like their writing was just in our discussion board feature that's in our LMS. So like that stuff with Grammarly is amazing, but like that wouldn't work for me because I didn't do it in a Google Doc. But I just wanted to make sure I clarified that because that was amazing, but it wouldn't work for me because we don't write in a Google
Doc. Right, exactly. Well, and I know there's at least one other teacher this year who I've convinced to try my like very complicated Google system. And she loves it too, but it takes a minute to set up. My philosophy in general though, and I think this applies to the way that I have set up my Google folders, and I think definitely to video feedback too, is that teaching is a lot about smarter, not harder. And in some situations, smarter, not harder means putting a lot of time and effort into something that's really going to yield great results, as opposed to, something that, how can I make this faster so that I can really be focused? I think it's like the 80-20 rule, right? So 80% of your growth comes from 20% of the work that you do, whether that's in teaching or in business or in any job. So I always try to ask myself when I'm going to do something new or sort of at the beginning of the year, what are my 20% things that are making the biggest impact and the biggest difference? And I want to spend a lot of my effort on that and then ask myself, how can I optimize the other 80% of teaching? Because let's get real, there's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of other stuff that's happening. How can I optimize that so that I can really focus on the stuff that matters and that drives student learning? I'm excited to see at the end of this year whether or not this is something that drives student learning. And I don't think I'll know that until like our last episode. So we're going to have to do some sort of like reflection, I feel like, on all of these things. But I'm excited because I think this really could, just based on the reaction that I got from students. What was the reaction that you got from students, Emily? I feel like this is a good transition point for that.
Yeah, they didn't really, some of them said they liked it to me but I don't think they looked at it until basically I forced them to with that reflection piece. And I think, and that's actually why I tried to do that, because even for my other writing assignments where they always have a rubric, like I don't think they look at it.
No, I don't. Every year at the beginning of the year, I pull up a rubric and I ask students, what is this? And they'll be like, oh, that's a rubric. I'm like, cool, what is it for? And they're like, it's a rubric.
So I don't think the kids look at the rubrics like at all. For conferences this year, I'm having my kids do a reflection Google form. And I literally, the Google form walked them through, go look at your report card in the system, tell me what grade you got. Now go into your LMS, click on grades, look at all of your grades. What's your lowest grade? How can you improve that lowest grade? Because generally they're either zeros for missing assignments, or their homework grade is low, or their writing scores in general are low. Mm-hmm. And then set a goal based on that. And I pulled the how to write a SMART goal. I pulled from that. And then the last question on it was basically like a fill in the blank. So by the end of quarter two, I want to blank. I will know I have reached my goal when blank. To reach my goal, I need to blank. And then I shared those answers with the parents when we met with them for conferences.
I love it.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that by doing that at the end of the first quarter, by the time we get to the end of the second quarter, they'll be used to looking at those grades in their grade tab, looking at their rubrics, and looking at all of that. Because I think they just don't look at it.
Oh, no, I think you are right on point. I mean, think about the age of our students, right? Like they're 12, they're 13. Like these are, they need practice doing this kind of reflective work. And I think this is really great because it sort of goes back to a little bit something we talked about with Sarah, which had to do with, us giving them feedback, but also them giving feedback through videos or giving feedback to each other. And I'm not sure that, like, I don't quite feel ready for that step yet.
Yeah, I'm ready for that step yet either.
But in the future, like, I would love to have the students record video feedback maybe at the end of the year for me about my teaching. Or, you know what I mean? Like, slowly build up how they're doing that. Because I think that the process of analyzing how do I get better at something is a good life skill, right? Yeah. At the beginning of the year, in the very, very first lesson, I always ask my students, what is it that you're going to learn in this class? And they'll give me all kinds of different answers. They'll be like, I'm going to learn reading. I'm going to learn writing. I'm going to learn what a topic sentence is. I'm going to learn poetry, like all this different stuff. And I always say, that's great. And I really hope you learn all of those things, right? Like, truly, I hope that those are my standards. Like, that we're working towards that goal. The most important thing you're actually here to learn is how to learn. Right? Because I guarantee you, I shouldn't tell you my teacher secret, some of this stuff you're not going to use in the rest of your life, right? Like, you may not ever read, you'll go to high school and you'll probably read Shakespeare. But like, once you leave a certain amount of life, like, you may not use that particular skill. But you will come across in the profession that you choose, in something that you want to do in life, something that you don't know how to do, something that is hard for you, something where you have to be your own teacher. And that's really what I'm here to do. I'm here to teach you how to be your own teacher. And I think this really reinforces that. And I think is a good place for growth. So I don't want to put the cart before the horse. I really want to see what kind of growth we see in writing, like doing it for the year. Like I said, I'm committed. Like I was very skeptical. I was very nervous about this one, Emily, when we first started. I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do this. And now I'm like, I'm super in. But it, if it does really produce the kind of growth that I think it has the potential to, then I think that there's room to sort of build in more of that kind of life skills of learning kind of stuff.
And I'm interested to see, like, now that I did it for one, because honestly, the scores on that first TDA were terrible.
It's the beginning of the year.
Yeah. So now that they've done a second one, and they just did it like last week, last Friday, and we're recording this on Tuesday, so I've not had time to look at this yet. And I still have a bunch of kids who haven't turned it in yet, so I'm interested to kind of pull that data into an Excel spreadsheet and compare like the averages, taking out the kids who didn't do it times, but taking the actual averages of the kids who turn in the two TDAs and see, does their score improve from the last time to the first one? Now, I taught it a little differently based on some things that I learned in between, but like, did my video feedback help, knowing that there are some confounding factors built in?
Well, and sometimes we can't have perfect data, but I love that that's where you're going. I mean, I have not changed since I instituted my Google system of doom. I haven't changed a ton about how I do writing. That was one of the first things that in teaching I really wanted to work on, because I felt like it was a pretty foundational one of what we do. Certainly looking at my data assignment to assignment, that is going to be the major variable, the thing that has changed. So I'm excited to like make some comparisons. And I wonder even if it's possible for me to like go crazy and get like a quick average of how they did last year, because it is all the same assignments too. Like there could be some cool charts, maybe in like our, we'll follow up at some point. And do some of that. But I'm excited. I think this is really good. I think it, certainly I got good feedback from students, but also from parents. I got one mom who sent me an email that said, you know, initially, you know, I just looked at my student's grade and I was upset with the grade that they had gotten because I know how hard my son worked on it. And this student did work very hard because it's a personal narrative. It was about a very personal topic. And so I think the parent felt a little bit like, because the student was so vulnerable emotionally in what they wrote, they should have earned a better grade. Does that make sense? So I directed her to the video feedback and I said, take a look at why I did what I did and the things that I say in that. And she sent me back an email that was really, really kind, that, you know, thanked for all the kind things that I said in the video, that she completely understands now why the student got the grade that she got. And she said, I didn't look below it and see that I could make some changes. You know, he worked very hard on this. I will have him make those, you know, grammar and structure changes that have nothing to do with the content, right? It's the grammar, it's the structure, it's the ancillary stuff that brought down his grade. And I was excited to give that student a better score. You know, it wasn't like this was a student right at the end of the quarter, you know, whatever deadline, who was just trying to get it in. This was a student who was taking pride in his work. And I felt better able to explain, not just to the student, but also to this family, why certain things had happened. I think it made the student feel better about their score too, because he better understood that it wasn't, you know, what he wrote, it was how certain things were there, and that those small things are fixable, right? But the important thing, the heart behind what he wrote, that kind of stuff, you know, could stay where it was and could stay and still be important.
And it wasn't like my kid who was like, I wrote the wrong thing and you hated it.
Right.
Which was not true at all. Had something substantial to there was a reason behind what you said.
Yes.
And we'll have a whole bunch of evidence in our show notes. I don't know I haven't decided exactly which pieces of evidence I'm going to put in the show notes. So I may or may not pick his to put in. But I might
just to see what that actually looks like. I think that'd be good. I picked out a video that I'm going to show just because I want you to be able to see the rubric, you know, and then how the Grammarly overlay works, yeah. Because that like was completely unexpected and turned out to be really cool. But also what that process sort of looked like. So you can check in the show notes to see our evidence from this particular, this particular episode. Emily, is there anything else that we want to, you know, say before we end our coaching session?
I don't think so. Sorry guys. Like this was a long one, but this was super exciting.
You know what? I think I really got a lot out of this process and I'm actively going to change some important things about the way that I'm teaching this year. It sounds like you're going to do the same. And I'm really proud of like us and very proud of you because it is hard. I think sometimes with something like this, I'm thinking back to where I was like finishing that episode with Sarah. I was so like excited to have just talked with her. And there's that excitement of I'm going to go try something new. This is going to be great. And then the next morning sitting down in my office at like 6:30 AM in the dark being like, oh, now I actually have to do this. This is going to be hard. It's going to take a long time. I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to do it. You know, there's good payoff and there's good reward. And I think that I'm hoping that the rest of this project is going to be, you know, I'm sure that we'll encounter things that we'll try in the classroom that are going to truly, truly explode in our faces. But I'm glad that this first one, at the very least, seems to have been a win, yeah, for both of us, and that we have we have some good stuff moving forward.
For sure, yeah. And I'm super excited to keep trying it. And I think the more we do it, the more our kids will realize like what we're doing and that we're not out to get them, and that that they'll continue to keep improving and hopefully get just keep reflecting and keep moving in the right direction.
I love it. All right. Well, thank you for joining us on the Cyber Sisters podcast. We will be taking a break for the winter holidays. So we're going to see you back in the new year on January 7th. In the meantime, you can keep in touch with us on our socials. We're on Twitter. I'm at Allison K Teaches. And Emily is at Settler Cyber. You can also leave us a comment on your thoughts about the episode or using sort of video feedback in general at tinyurl.com/cybersisters. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Keep trying hard and we'll see you next time.